When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
What does every grocery store aisle now have in common? Products that come in paper packaging. And we don't just mean the obvious ones like cereal boxes and juice cartons. From beauty products to boxed water, there are more opportunities to go papertarian than ever before. So why should you? Because paper comes from a renewable resource and can be recycled up to 7 times. Simply put, it's the smart choice for the environment. And it turns out, the easiest choice for you. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's green thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil, just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks at the future and says, my evil twin, bad weather friend, he always wants to start when I want to begin. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick. I don't usually ask, but I want to ask this time. What was that?
That's the song My Evil Twin by They Might Be Giants.
Oh, you go to them a lot, don't you?
I do. They, admittedly, I'm an enormous They Might Be Giants fan.
Now, we're going to talk about some twins today, but I am under the distinct impression that not a one of these two guys is evil.
No. Neither of them appear to be evil as far as I can tell.
One has a mustache.
Not a goatee.
Well, at times he has a mustache.
Yeah, and we've got a story about that later.
So we're talking specifically about NASA's twin study. But before we get into that, we're going to set the ground here a little bit. We've talked in previous episodes that space, you know, that big black thing up in the sky, is trying to kill you.
Where most of the everything is.
Yeah, most of everything that's not us, that's out there, it's trying to kill us. It's
Earth does a really good job of protecting us from deadly, deadly space.
Yeah, so it's about as harsh an environment as you can get to. And it takes a lot of effort to get there, actually. But at any rate, there are a lot of things that can kill you in space, some of which are pretty immediate, like the lack of oxygen. That'd be a big one. We need that. Also,
pretty regularly. Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually talking earlier today about someone was asking me, hey, does the tinnitus in your ear bother you all the time? I said, only when I think about it, and you're making me think about it. It's kind of like when you think about breathing, and then you get to a point when you think about breathing that you worry you will never stop thinking about breathing.
Oh, no. Jonathan, can I be pedantic and say we recently had a listener write in and tell us to stop pronouncing tinnitus and pronounce it tinnitus because the listener said that is how it is pronounced.
Oh, well, that's funny because it's not the way that the guy who was telling me about my tinnitus was pronouncing it. And he was a doctor. but could totally be wrong. At any rate, so there are some other concerns besides the immediate ones that'll kill you right away. There's radiation. There's a lot of radiation out in space, different types of radiation, and mm-hmm. some of it is potentially extremely harmful to humans.
You're in a low-gravity environment, which is precisely the kind of thing that human beings did not evolve in.
Yeah. low-gravity environment means that you can lose muscle mass as well as bone density. I mean, there's some long-term effects that can easily be very detrimental if you are out there for any good length of time.
Yeah, astronauts spend a lot of time on the exercise machines just trying to stave off this physical decay, and it doesn't work entirely.
No, at best it slows it.
Yeah.
It also does fun things like reshape your eyeballs. Yay.
That's a good one.
Makes you taller. We'll talk about that a little bit, too.
We will. I've got a fun fact about that.
Interesting. So NASA has been studying the effects of space on living, breathing human beings for decades, right?
Sure.
So that's not anything new, but over
There's a problem with it.
What's
which
that?
Is that you can never know exactly how somebody's health would have looked had they not gone into space.
Yes, this is the problem we talk about with like weather control, because you can never tell if it would have rained without the weather control either, right? So what do you do? I mean, you send someone up in space, maybe they catch a really bad cold, and you aren't really sure if that was, you know, if being in space made that easier for that to happen, how can you tell?
Oh, sure, because a lot of what we're learning about genetics, like the more we dig into the human genome, the more we realize that a person's very specific makeup and body chemistry has so much to do with how they deal with environments.
Yeah, so if you want to follow the scientific method, the ideal thing to do, if you could, would be to take two exactly identical humans and send one into space and keep the other one on Earth.
But those never exist, Joe. Where would we find such people? Oh, identical twins.
Yeah. And that's exactly what has happened. We have just recently seen one identical twin, Scott Kelly, come back to Earth and rejoin his fellow identical twin, Mark Kelly, here on the surface.
I think only one of the twins is identical.
Oh, I'm sorry. The one identical twin and the unidentical twin met up with each other.
No, of course I'm kidding.
Yes. So they, in NASA, you know, this was a great opportunity for NASA to say, let's take a look at how the two compare and contrast after a prolonged exposure to outer space for one of them while the other one remains here on Earth.
So them being twins, I assume they were born on the same day.
Yes. I mean, technically, if it were really close to midnight, they could be on two different days.
Or if it was a really long delivery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's also a possibility. But they were both born February 21st, 1964, Mark and Scott Kelly. So here's some little bit of background information on the two. Mark Kelly attended the United States Merchant Marine Academy and received a bachelor's degree in marine engineering and transportation. Much later, he earned a master's degree in aeronautical engineering at the U.S. Naval Postgraduate School. Meanwhile, Scott Kelly attended the State University of New York and received a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering. He also pursued postgraduate degrees. He got a master's degree in aviation systems from the University of Tennessee.
And they would both wind up being pilots in the Navy.
Yep. So between their initial college and their postgraduate work, they both joined the Navy. And they both became pilots. Scott became a pilot in 1987, and Mark became a pilot in 1989. And in 1994, they both graduated the U.S. Navy Test Pilot School. And if you know anything about test pilots, and you take a look at where a lot of the pilots from the astronaut class
pool
comes from, the U.S. Navy Test Pilot School, that's a large representation.
They tend to have the right stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're not trying to become a top gun, you're trying to become an astronaut.
Uh-huh.
So at any rate, in 1996, they also both began training to become astronauts. So Scott Kelly was the first one to go into space, becoming the pilot for the space shuttle mission STS-103.
That's a good one.
It was the Discovery. It was a good one. This was the mission sent up to make repairs to a very important piece of equipment in orbit.
The Hubble Space Telescope.
Yeah, as if you recall, the Hubble had a couple of problems that needed to be adjusted after it had been launched.
Talked about that before, yep. Yes.
Now, I could be wrong about this, but I believe that that is the farthest anybody has gone from Earth since the moon. since the last moon mission
would have been this particular mission.
Would have been the mission to repair the Hubble.
That sounds correct to me. I don't happen to know that.
Because the Hubble's in a higher orbit than the space station.
Then, yes, exactly. The International Space Station's at a lower orbit. I think you're correct. So here's hoping. If we're wrong, people will let us know.
Yeah.
At any rate, Mark would then get his first chance to go into space in 2001, so a few years after Scott had gone up. And Mark piloted the Endeavour for mission STS-108, which brought astronauts up to the International Space Station. And both brothers flew on and commanded several other missions to space. They both were involved in them, never together, but they both were working in on various missions throughout the years. At one point, they were actually going to be the first siblings to be in space at the same time. They were going to both be Scott, I think, was going to be up on the International Space Station. Mark was going to command a launch
mm-hmm.
and launch into space, so they would both be in space at the same time. But various delays pushed back the launch for Mark's mission to further back in 2011,
mm-hmm.
and it pushed it beyond the time when Scott was returning from the International Space Station.
And Mark wound up retiring out of the astronaut business.
Yeah, he did so because of a truly terrible moment in U.S. history, one that I'm sure a lot of our listeners will remember. So he almost didn't go on this 2011 mission at all after the delay because his wife, Gabrielle Giffords, who was a representative for the state of Arizona in the House of Representatives here in the United States, was one of the victims of a mass shooting. She was having a meeting with constituents in a parking lot at a supermarket, and a man opened fire into the crowd, killing a few people and hitting Giffords in the head.
She survived, though.
She survived and made a remarkable recovery. Everyone talked about how amazing it was that she was able to recover so quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Although after he did return from that mission, he wound up retiring in order to
help her with her continued recovery. Yes, she actually was able to attend the launch of his mission.
Oh.
She was able to recover enough to be there for that. And then a few months after he returned from his mission, he said, I'm leaving the Navy, I'm leaving the space program, and I'm going to be with my wife. So that was, at that point, Mark ends up retiring from the space program.
But that doesn't mean he has to be done helping with space research.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. He can do, he actually is helping with space research by not going into space. He's the control twin.
So how does the twin study work?
It was part of another project, the one-year mission, which is a little bit of a misnomer. There were two people who were part of this. One was Scott Kelly, and the other was a Russian cosmonaut. And the idea was to send these two people up into space for 340 days.
That's not exactly a year.
Which is why it's
a misnomer. Our listeners will say.
That's why it's a misnomer. Yeah, 340 days, so not a full year. But the purpose was to study the long-term effects of space on the human body, as well as a ton of other research projects, which I'll talk about in a second. So part of this is NASA's plan to try and build a path for us to get to Mars, to have human explorers go to Mars.
Not an easy path.
Not an easy path at all, because as we've said in previous episodes, NASA's approach to a Martian mission would be about 30 months long. And that's partially because getting from Earth to Mars takes several months, and getting from Mars to Earth, back to Earth takes several months. But more importantly, in order for you to conserve fuel so that you don't have to have as heavy a spacecraft, you have a better chance of success.
Your mission is slightly less horrifyingly expensive.
Yeah. And you are also spending the least amount of time in the most dangerous of the environments. Not that we remember, Mars is trying to kill you, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not trying to kill you as hard as space is.
You can dig a hole on Mars, and that's a little bit better than being in space.
So,
Mars has a little bit of gravity.
Yes. At any rate, the trip, you would want to launch your spacecraft when the orbits of Earth and Mars are at their most advantageous, where it's going to require the least amount of distance to travel from one to the other. And by the time you make that trip once, the two planets are no longer in that configuration, and you're going to have to wait a significant amount of time for them to come back round to that so you can make the return trip with that same smaller distance, which is why the overall mission would last 30 months. In order for us to get there, we have to know what are the long-term effects of space on the human body so that we can make sure that the people we send there have the best chance for success, and we're not going to put people's lives in danger because, or at least not more danger than they otherwise would be just going into space in the first place. So very important type of mission. So at any rate, the two went up, Scott Kelly and Mikhail Kornienko. They were representing a joint operation between the Russian space program and NASA. And the idea is that they're going to share all information and results with one another to benefit mankind in an effort to get to Mars and beyond in the future.
Yeah, and this is the longest that anyone has been up for a NASA mission, but not for a Russian mission.
Yeah. So there's a cosmonaut named Valery Polyakov who spent nearly 438 days. I think technically it's 437.7 days.
A little slacker.
In space. aboard the Mir space station, M-I-R space station. But that obviously was not a NASA mission. So that was the longest anyone has spent in space. In fact, Polyakov said upon returning that, in his opinion, we could totally go to Mars.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's some great, possibly apocryphal stories about some of the things he did as soon as he got out of his space capsule. But that's for another time.
I'm like, yeah, was that statement part of the space madness or?
Well, he seemed to be like about as stereotypical a, like think of your stereotypical big bear of a Russian.
Uh-huh.
Those are the kind of stories attributed to this guy. At any rate.
Okay. So what specifically was this study trying to look for?
Well, it's part of NASA's Human Research Program, or HRP, and some of it was just really basic stuff, like how do you provide for the long-term nutrition of astronauts going out into deep space? Because for shorter missions, it's not, I mean, obviously you want them to have enough calories and the right nutrients to be able to do their job, but you're not thinking necessarily for long-term. People, you know, a lot of like the space shuttle missions lasted about a week to 10 days. So you didn't have to worry about that much. When you're talking about long term, you got to start thinking about other stuff that can set in, like scurvy. So you actually have to sit there and think, all right, well, how do we make sure that they get enough vitamin C so that they are not going to be prone to scurvy, that sort of stuff. They also wanted to study things like fluid redistribution in space. I mean, fluid within the human body. We've talked about that. Joe, I remember when we talked about space foods, you talked about how a lot of people like the spicy shrimp cocktail, partially because the fluid redistribution makes you feel kind of like you're congested and have a cold, and so it's hard to smell and taste things.
Yes.
So they wanted to study that in greater detail and see if there were ways of working with that. How dangerous could it be? Could it actually impact things like your vision over time? That's really important stuff to know if you're going to send people into space.
Does impact your vision, right?
Yeah, because of the aforementioned eyeball reshaping.
Right.
Yeah.
So they also wanted to find out ways to ward off stress and fatigue. Obviously, morale is going to be a very important thing for long-distance missions where you're going to be feeling increased sense of isolation from everybody who isn't on your crew. You're going to feel the opposite of that for everyone who is on your crew because – as Scott Kelly has said, it's tricky to find a way to fall asleep on these missions because you're so close to everyone else. If they're on a task and you have a sleep shift, being able to sleep next to someone who's working is challenging. So you have to design your spacecraft in such a way to try and limit the kind of noise and other interference you might encounter while someone else is trying to do his or her job. So things that I wouldn't have even really thought about, like, oh, yeah, I guess, you know, that could be a huge impact on your mental and physical health over the long term. So they wanted to look into that as well. And they did tons of other science besides the various impact on the bodies. They actually did 450 different investigations aboard the International Space Station over that 340-day stay. And only 18 of those 450 were actually about human reactions and functions. Everything else was various exploratory science, like what happens when you put worms in space? You get Dune.
What does happen?
Dune happened.
No, it doesn't.
It didn't really get a lot of coverage, but I'm pretty sure the thing I made up happened.
Wait a minute. You made up Dune? You're Frank Herbert?
Look, I don't like to toot my own horn, especially when I'm lying like crazy. So let's just move on with the twin study, okay?
Excellent. What about that twin study?
So this was the more specific study that was encapsulated in that one-year mission, right? The idea being that, hey, we've got an identical twin here on Earth.
Who must face my Gom Jabbar.
Unrelated to anything else that I've lied about so far. Now, we have this one guy on Earth, and his identical twin is in space, so we can compare the two. We can do a whole bunch of different measurements before the mission. We can monitor people throughout the mission. We can do a bunch of studies after the mission is over, compare and contrast the two, and figure out what, if any, variables we can eliminate from certain outcomes. Are there certain things that we can be fairly certain are due to the exposure to the microgravity environment being on the International Space Station for 340 days? Are there some where we can't be absolutely certain? Or, you know, in science, nothing is ever an absolute certainty. But which ones do we feel very strongly about versus which ones are a possibility, but we don't have enough information to really make a determination, that kind of stuff. So it involves 10 investigation teams who are all working together to look at the differences between the two twins. And these 10 teams are sharing all their work with one another, and their findings create an integrated study. So it's kind of like an integrated study with 10 mini studies inside it, mini being M-I-N-I, although each one is actually pretty impressive and exhaustive. So because the twins share the same genes, the hope is that the investigations will give us those insights as to the real effects of space. So those 10 investigations fall into four broad categories. The first is human physiology. So how does space affect the various tissues and organs of the human body, including the heart, the brain, and your muscles? Then you have behavioral health. How does being in space for a year affect a person's ability to reason and to make decisions? How does it affect that person's perception and alertness?
Does this include testing the ingestion of spice?
I never should have brought up Dune. The third one is...
Especially with me in the room, Jonathan. Come on, you know me.
The third category is microbiology. So how did the two different diets that the guy on Earth and the guy in space, how did their diets and the various stressors that they experienced throughout that year affect the organisms in their respective guts?
This one is really interesting to me.
Yeah, and it's especially important because we keep learning that your microbiome has a lot to do with other bodily processes, like your immune system function and your mental health.
Yeah, that the stuff in your guts can affect whether or not, you know, how you're feeling. Like, not just how you're feeling in your stomach, but how you're feeling upstairs, up in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy how much we see, you know, how big an influence we see down there. Suddenly going with your gut has a much stronger implication than it did before. And then the fourth category is molecular and omics. On a genetic level, what effect does space have on a person? Which genes switch on or off in space due to various stressors? Everything from microgravity to radiation exposure to just the sense of isolation. And how much of that does that change in other ways? Like what sort of proteins and metabolites are in the body? Usually you would find that out through collecting various samples like urine and sweat and blood, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. There's also a related question here about whether time and space ages you faster. And this is due to recent research that's pointed out the length of your telomeres as an indicator of your health and your youth. Telomeres being sort of like caps on the end of our chromosomes. I think we've talked about them on the show before. They sort of protect our DNA from deterioration and other wiggy stuff, disease issues, stuff like that. And space radiation could potentially affect your telomeres. So that's one of the things they're going to be looking at. But they're also going to do like a whole genome analysis, which is just so nerdy and terrific. I'm really excited about
it. Pretty cool. I will be very curious to hear about the differences between the two genomes once this is all done.
Yeah.
So each individual investigation under those four categories, all of them have really long technical names. So I thought going through all of them would, at some point you just started to tune out.
Yeah.
Because you're hearing a lot of technical words. But here's an example. Proteomic assessment of fluid shifts and association with visual impairment and intracranial pressure in twin astronauts. That's rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
These are very important studies, but like I said, if I were to list all of them by name, I'd have to take a break. One of the investigations ties into another topic we covered not that long ago, and that would be vaccines. So that particular investigation is called Characterizing Personalized Changes in Baseline Immune Abnormalities and Stimulated Immune Response in the Presence of a Benign Trivalent Inactivated Flu Vaccination.
Whoa.
Yeah. I told you they were long titles. So the purpose of that one, obviously, is to study the long-term effects of spaceflight on the immune system. Very important for us to know if we're ever going to send people to explore or colonize Mars, for example. Now, the really neat thing about this, to me, beyond just the idea that this gets us a little closer to our ability to go to Mars, is that we could stand to see incredible benefits from this research well outside of the space industry. And that's something that we talk about on this show all the time, the idea that research and science stands to give us incredible benefits that we cannot necessarily anticipate when we first start engaging in that investigation. Although this is one that NASA was specifically looking toward, they were thinking that this approach would allow them to help advance the study of personalized medicine. And that's one of those things that is a great promise of the future. We have a certain amount of personalized medicine today, but the idea of being able to essentially cater medical care to an individual based upon their genetics and their body chemistry is incredibly powerful, as opposed to the one-size-fits-some approach that medicine often follows, at least traditional medicine.
Of course, yeah. I also, just on another like warm, fuzzy kind of level, this research is bringing together dozens of universities and facilities around the U.S. and the world in order to look into this kind of stuff, which is just, aw, scientist buddies. Yay.
It's neat, especially when you consider how the initial space race was fueled by the opposite, right?
Yeah,
so it's nice to see collaboration as opposed to competition.
Mm-hmm. So what have we actually learned so far?
Well, we have learned from Scott Kelly that a trip to Mars is doable, in his opinion. That's him stating that based upon his experiences, he thinks that we have the capability of sending people to Mars right now. It just is a question of making that choice. So that's very that's really ambitious, obviously. I think a lot of people at NASA would argue that there needs to be some more intermediary steps before we take that particular jump. But it is very encouraging to see that from a person who actually went through and experienced this 340-day immersion in space. He also said that in order to keep himself motivated, he would focus on tasks, and in his downtime, he read a lot of email, he watched TV and movies, he would read just in general, he would also take lots of photos of Earth, and he said that normal activities helped keep him from feeling too isolated. He said it was really important, like the having scheduled tasks helped, but also just keeping himself occupied when he wasn't doing a specific investigation was really important, otherwise it just starts to get to you about how isolated you are from almost all of the rest of humanity. So also something else we talked about earlier, he ended up growing, or at least ended up being
stretching
huh. by about, depending upon the source you read, I've seen up from 1.5 to 2 inches, but 1.5 inches is the source that NASA itself said, which is about 4 centimeters while he was up in space. But since that time, it hasn't been very long since he got back.
It's been like 8 or 9 days as of the recording of this podcast.
Right. Since that time, he's already returned to his normal height.
Yeah. So this related to a fact, one of these factoids that that I bet you've heard before, the one about how when you wake up in the morning, you are taller than you were when you went to bed at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if that was true, but I actually looked it up, and it is true. This is a fact. Yeah, I read there was a 2006 article in the medical journal Scoliosis that said The effects of gravity on the upright human posture are powerful. Individuals are as much as 25 millimeters taller. 25 millimeters, I mean, come on, that's not that much. It says 25 millimeters taller in the morning than in the evening as a result of compressive forces bearing down all day. Mm-hmm. And astronauts grow in quotation marks, by nearly 75 millimeters when released from the force of Earth's gravity. So I thought that was really interesting. Not only is that fact true, but it's the same reason that you're taller when you get out of bed in the morning is why Scott Kelly was taller when he got back from space.
Yeah.
He didn't have gravity compressing him vertically all day.
Right. It's not like they put in space lifts while he was aboard the ISS. So most of what there is to be learned through this study has not yet happened as of the recording of this podcast. The research is ongoing. So we don't have a lot of results that we can give right now. Maybe perhaps in a future episode we can revisit this topic and talk about some of the specific results that have been publicly revealed by NASA. But right now, that's still ongoing research. And of course, we also always have to remember that even once we get that research, there are variables that might be in play that have nothing to do with one person being on Earth and one person being in space. You can't always be certain that it's one particular thing that led to a result, unless you've got an extremely carefully controlled experiment. And this experiment's awesome, and it stands to give us a lot of really useful information, but it's not the most carefully controlled experiment
sure.
I've ever read about.
Sure.
But it's really exciting stuff. And I promised a kind of a fun story about mustaches at the beginning, mm-hmm. and here it goes.
All stories about mustaches are fun.
They can be, yes. I have my own mustache that I'll be twirling soon, so I've got mustache wax at home to actually apply to it. I might do that at South by Southwest. Let's find out.
Yeah.
We'll find out on Saturday. So anyway, this specific mustache story relates to the fact that when it came time for Scott to launch into space back in March 2015, his twin brother Mark showed up at the launch facility, but he was clean shaven, and Mark usually wears a mustache. So that threw everybody off because Scott is typically clean shaven. Mark typically wears a mustache. Mark comes in with no mustache. People look at Mark and they suddenly think, oh my gosh, Scott isn't in the spacecraft and we're launching.
We're launching right now. Why is Scott not in the... Oh, it's Mark.
Yeah. According to NASA Administrator Charles Bolden, Mark fooled everyone because the mustache was how they just told the two apart. Now, if you look at pictures of the two back when Mark was sporting his mustache, there are other notable differences, but isolated,
sure.
when you're only seeing one of the two twins, I could easily see how you would make that mistake and have a moment of pure panic. So I thought that was really cool. And I love at least the article I read made it sound as if this was entirely planned by Mark.
It's just a prank.
Yeah, to pull a prank on NASA. And I love that kind of sense of humor. It's also something you typically find with test pilots.
Sure. Well, I think that also, like, anytime that you can prank NASA, you're having a pretty good day.
That's true.
So this research is really cool, but I've got a proposal for the next thing they should do.
Okay, what's that?
The next stage after the twin study for a year in space should be the twin paradox study for a year at light speed.
Ooh. Yeah.
Or I guess not at light speed, at 99% of light speed.
You get to work on the near light speed engine.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was about to say, I foresee one minor stumbling block before we are able to carry out that investigation.
And I'll start working on recruiting some twins.
Yeah. Now, if you're not familiar, the twin paradox would be an interesting thing to study
sure.
in reality. It's sort of been an experiment conducted in thought, and the math of it seems to work out.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to see if it happens in reality. Of course, the idea is that if you due to the effects of relativity, the time dilation effects of relativity, if you took two twins, put one of them in a spaceship and had it go near the speed of light for a certain amount of time and then come back to Earth, theoretically, the one living on Earth should have aged more than the one on the spaceship.
Right. Time for each twin would have seemed to have passed at the same rate, but in reference to one another, it would be at different rates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in other words, the twin on Earth would think that the twin aboard the spacecraft was living in slow motion. And the twin aboard the spacecraft would think the twin on Earth was living fast forward. But individually, they would each experience time as we normally do. That's one of those crazy things about relativity. Well, if you have crazy things to tell us, don't. Just tell us the really cool stuff. Send us an email. Our address is fwthinking@howstuffworks.com. Or you can get in touch with us through social media. Our Twitter handle is fwthinking. You can search FW Thinking in Facebook. Our Facebook page will pop right up. You can leave us a message there. And we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
There are choices that can change your life.
Like the choice to start routine colorectal cancer screening at age 45.
It's one of the most common cancers for women and men. And it doesn't always have symptoms.
But there's good news. Routine screening can catch colorectal cancer early and even prevent it.
And there's even better news. You have screening options.
Make the choice to put your health first. Talk to your doctor about your screening options or visit cdc.gov/screenforlife for more information.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.